Van die machtige waters van die Oranje in die Noordkaap tot die uitgestrektheid van die Grand Canyon in Arizona. Radio Grootrivier.co.za. Oral op die web. Radiostasie van die Suidlanders.
Goeienaand en welkom by Radio Grootrivier, radiostasie van die Suidlanders. Jou stem hier uit die Noordkaap uit en jou Afrikaanse kulturele lekker radiostasie. Ons is weer eens besig met ons splinternuwe reeks. Laasweek en Dinsdag was dit die eerste episode daarvan en die nuwe reeks se naam is Voorbereiding, Dink Anders. So die reeks doen ons saam met Simon Roche waar hy in diepte met ons gesels oor voorbereiding of prepping soos dit alom bekend is en hy het baie unieke uitkyk oor prepping of oor voorbereiding. Nou as jy nog steeds nie weet wie Simon Roche nie, hy is die nasionale departementshoof van buitelands van die Suidlanders en hy het ook 'n geweldige kennis oor prepping en voorbereiding en alles wat rondom dit dan gaan. So, sonder ophou, kom ons kyk of ons vir Simon aan die hande kry. Goeienaand Simon, hoe gaan dit met jou?
Dit gaan goed met my en met jou, Marius.
Nee, maar dit gaan altyd goed aan hierdie kant, ons is geseend. Ek doen 'n werk waaroor ek mal is en ons kan nie kla nie.
Ja, ek is bly om dit te hoor. Hoe warm is dit daarso?
Nee, die laaste 2 dae is lekker koel hier op Appington. Ons geniet dit gewoonlik. Hierdie tyd van die jaar is dit baie, baie warm. Maar in die hoë 20s of baie laat 30s, maar gewoonlik in hierdie tyd is ons mos nou al by die 38s, 39s rond. So ons geniet die koel weer op hierdie stadium.
Yes, I don't know how you do it, honestly. Really, I don't know.
Ja, Simon, ek en jy het vroeger bietjie vandag gepraat en ek het wel weer eens moet ek net vir die luisteraars sê, julle moet regtig waar natuurlik na die episode 1 gaan luister, dit is op ons pot gooi op Radio Grootrivier se webtuiste, gaan soek net daarvoor, die titel se naam is Voorbereiding, Dink Anders en dit lê die grondslag vir alles waaroor Simon met ons verder gaan gesels en ons het laasweek Dinsdag het jy so vinnig op dit geraak oor Jaco, hy is hierdie prepping guru. So ek neem aan ons gaan of jy gaan 'n bietjie daarin induik vanaand vir ons.
Ja. Ja, Jaco is how they pronounce it in Croatia. My mind is I just got this mental image of how Ramaphosa got his bottom spanked at BRICS with his valedictory speech, his goodbye speech. Sorry, my mind just drifted to that thing. I've had it on my mind so much. If that is not the most humiliating embarrassment that has ever been dished out diplomatically at the highest levels in my lifetime, then I don't know. Goodness me, but they made a child of him. Anyway, back to the subject. I was just now looking at YouTube videos, you know, killing time waiting for this meeting, this conversation from my bucky on the built where I can get signal about 9 kilometers from my house. Although it looks as if I'll have internet within a few days, maybe even this week. Satellite internet, not Starlink, but the other satellite. And I saw Tucker Carlson interviewing a former CIA officer called Amaryllis Fox.
Yeah.
So a woman, Amaryllis, the flower. And it was a short. So it was an excerpt from a much longer interview. You know, he does long interviews. And she was talking about EMP attacks. And she made the point that the CIA's estimate is that in the forthcoming war, 9 out of 10 people will die in the first year. And that reminded me of a BBC interview. This is all going to be relevant to what I have pre-prepared. A BBC interview of about, dear me, it might be 20 years ago now, in which the guy interviewed, and I think it was Nouriel Roubini or the other Lebanese economist whose name escapes me for the moment. And in that interview, they described how something like 90% of people in cities will die within the first 30 days, not a year, 30 days. And that's obviously pertinent to what we're going to talk about tonight. And I think it fits quite nicely. I've written a lot of stuff, so I'm going to read. And if you want to interrupt with a query or if something that I say has been written poorly and it verwar mense, if it bewilders people, then feel free to interrupt, Marius.
Okay, I will do.
Okay, so the interview is going to, I mean, the episode is going to be in two halves. We're going to discuss an anecdote taken from Gekko, and then we're going to talk about prepping items. So he makes an interesting introduction to his series. It's used to be $30 when I got it. I don't know what it is now. He's got a long series that you can buy. It's very, very, very good. His company is shtfschool.com, if anybody wants to buy it. He says, in the year before Civil War, people become less friendly to one another. Generally, workplaces, homes, and social environments become quieter as people withdraw into themselves, as they instinctively but subconsciously feel an impending doom that they don't necessarily or can't necessarily express. They're not sure what it is, but there's something going on in their subconscious. As resources start to dwindle prior to the revolutionary events, as he put it, such as bread dwindled in France prior to the storming of the Bastille prison and arsenal. It was a prison and it was an arsenal. And in fact, the storming was originally for those unarmed guys to get lay their hands on arms, and they freed the prisoners as an incidental thing. On the 14th of July, 1789 in Paris. And as we anticipate what may be the case here in South Africa with fuel and thus food in the event of global fuel shortages, as a consequence of possible war between Israel, the USA, and Iran. And of course, everybody knows what we're talking about there. We've discussed it elsewhere previously. One of the first things that will happen is that the Persian Gulf will be closed, and 40% of the world's natural gas and 30% of the world's oil supply will immediately stop. And that's not to mention other places that may be affected, but that for sure will happen, and it will happen immediately in the first days. So as we contemplate the consequences of that in South Africa, when we eye this brewing war from a distance, then people begin to form gangs to protect their interests, to safeguard their resources against other gangs pillaging and plundering. And very interestingly, in rural areas, they collaborate to continue farming without, say, diesel. So that was what he observed happened in Yugoslavia, or actually in Bosnia. He was part of a Croatian community that had occupied a part of Bosnia since before the Muslims took it over. A very ancient community, a particular city of a few hundred thousand people. So on that basis, when this guy Gekko, the famous prepper guru, was asked, what is the single most important thing about preparing for a civil war or similar crisis? He said, number one is your group or gang. End of story. And he said, weapons, yeah, for sure. I don't say you shouldn't have a weapon. It's very helpful. But you want to know what is most important? It's your group or your gang. And he spoke about how his gang was 15 people. It was his great uncle, his grandfather, his father and mother, and there might have been a granny and an auntie in there too, And all told, they were 15 people. And I think he said that 10 of them occupied one house. So they forced everybody into these, into this communist house, you know. Yugoslavia was a communist country, and we've all heard the stories about how the average people shared a one-bedroom flat with two other families. So in this tiny, tiny space, they put 10 people in there that were family members, and then there were another five. And I've not heard him explain explicitly where those five were, presumably next door or something. And number two is location. So again, he's emphasizing people in America, he now lives in America, are besotted by weapons. And he said, I'm not saying that they're not important. I'm just saying they're not the most important thing, because if you're alone with a rifle, or it's you and your wife, or you and your wife and your child, he said, you will not last. Other gangs of 15 to 20 people will overwhelm you, and they will take that rifle away. They will find a way. He said, whereas if you're a gang of 10 or 15 people, other gangs won't pick on you because they don't know what you've got. And they know that at least, at the very least, you've got backup. So you may not have weapons, but we don't know that. And even if you don't have weapons, we don't want to try to storm a place where 15 people throw bricks at us. You know, it's very much a hyena mentality or a jackals mentality. You see how what cowards hyenas are, but then you read on the back of the Chappie's paper about how each tooth by itself in a hyena's mouth can apply 200 pounds per square inch of force. It's that mentality of, I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to be, even if I win the fight, the hyena with a broken pelvis in my pack, because I won't last. So no matter how much more powerful I am, I always only ever take on something that is much, much weaker than me, preferably something that's already dead. And yeah, I think that's the most valuable lesson to learn. And it's just such a pity that so few people think like that. And I know that because I'm on social media all the time, and I hear what people say. And it's never your group, and it's seldom location. It's always bullets. And he said that the location should be rural, and the entire gang should occupy the same house or at least property. He made the point that in rural, running water, electricity, and transport and food are less important as pre-preparations. So he made that point incidentally. He's saying, once you go rural and you've got your 15 people and the thugs of the local township or Julius Malema's guys are contemplating who to take on, they're not going to come for your farmhouse first. And he said, yes, yeah, so he went on to make the point, and by the way, don't worry so much about electricity, transport, and food if you're rural. He had relatives who also formed a gang, a group, and they were rural. And his cousin, who is the person who interviews him, asked him, how did they do? And he said, oh, the life just went on as per usual. Obviously, they were afraid of getting caught up in the conflict. It was a bitter conflict. The Yugoslav Civil War was terrible, terrible, terrible. But by and large, they lived as they'd lived previously. And yeah, they had a very comfortable life. And he said they, you know, we were all envious because they stayed just as fat as they were before. They didn't get skinny like the rest of us.
Yeah.
So he goes on to talk about why rural. He says, people have few connections in the city, so forming a gang is difficult. Plus, they are death traps, that is to say cities. Too many people, too confined, and too entrapping, and just too many threats. He's then asked, what next? So you could say this is now item number 3 in the list of priorities. And of course, you know, he's got to say guns by now. And he doesn't. Without hesitation, he says skills. In other words, before a car and spare fuel or a generator or warm clothing comes skills to survive a civil war. Now, there will be many people in South Africa who say, no, I have to get out. Yes, your circumstances differ. We all understand that. But listen to what he says. He says, before any of those things come skills, particularly mechanical and repair and medical, which, dear Saitlanders, absolutely implies, and he states this too, tools, including a basic medical kit. So item number 4, after skills, again, not guns and bullets, skills to survive. If you've got a gang and you've got a good location, you've got to bring skills. And if you've got skills, you have to have tools. So that brings us to part 2 for tonight, and that is tools and basic medical to prepare.
Okay.
Shall I go on, or do you have some questions?
No. Ek het maar net gedink, soos wat jy gepraat het, toe dink ek maar net aan die Suidlander organisasie nou, en hoe is dit opgedeel in die departemente en die dinge, en hoe dit actually so mooi inpas by van Jaco se dinge wat hy sê. Maar ja, definitief, soos jy nou ook gesê het, as ek ook met mense gepraat het, die heel eerste ding wat hulle oor praat of sê is, ach man, weet jy wat, ons gaan nie reg waar voorberei nie, ons is hier in 'n dorpie of ons is in die stad, maar ek het daar my wapen, ek het my nunchucks en ek het my golfstokke en ek het my geweerkie en ek het my wat ook al, so ek sal kan uitgaan en ook maar op my eie gaan plunder, want ek het daar my wapen by my, en dit is die mees verkeerste wyse om aan te dink, want as jy alleen gaan probeer staan met jou wapentjie, soos jy sê, gaan die ander mense wat groepeer het, gaan jou oorval en jy gaan dit nie maak nie.
Yeah, absolutely. And he witnessed that. He saw it happen
before
his very eyes over a protracted period of time. They were entrapped in that city. I told you previously for a year, but he said something in the interview. I went back and listened to it again in preparation for this. He said something that implies that it was 2 years. I can't explain the discrepancy to you, but he, in any case, was exposed to it for either 4 or 8 full seasons.
Yeah.
So let's begin with the tools and related stuff.
Yeah.
I've given this a lot of thought, and I've done a lot of research on it over 10 years now, this particular aspect of things. And so in keeping with what we discussed last week, I'm not going to propose a table saw and a generator and maybe a helicopter, because it's a really great tool for, like, if you have to go like over a mountain, like really quickly, like, and come back, like, then no, the basics that ordinary people can afford, that even retired Saitlanders on pensions and poor Saitlanders, that single mothers can afford, maybe not everything. And maybe not all at once, but it's kind of semi-reasonable to aim at this target and see how close you get to it. A wood saw with spare blades. A metal saw with spare blades. Screwdrivers with many screws. And jeweler's screwdrivers, in other words, small screwdrivers, because we're not going to be able to import anything under the circumstances that we anticipate, the circumstances that are brewing in the world as we speak now. So we will wish to be able to repair everything. And sometimes the most valuable things will be small things and delicate things. A hammer with many nails, a rivet gun with many rivets, tire repair kits, and you will never have too many. If you buy 1,000 of them, you will run out, even if you use them for trading.
vulcanized rubber is going to be in short supply. A hand drill with many bits. Cement glue. There's, I can't think of the name of it offhand, but there is a very good epoxy-based cement glue that has an Afrikaans name. It's the best of the best. People can say whatever they like. That South African one is the best. If you want to know what is the best of what Bucky or whatever, ask a farmer, because in his world, it's non-negotiable. Yeah. So he will know. Yeah, I mean, all the farmers use one cement glue, and it is the one with the Afrikaans name. Oh, dear me, I wish I could pluck fuss or something like that. Anyway, a multi-tool, Allen keys, pliers, long-nosed pliers, side cutters, fencing pliers, and multi-grip pliers. If somebody listening doesn't know what a multi-grip pliers is, it's that one that looks like a, like I always thought from when I was a child that it looked like it had a crocodile's mouth, long mouth, and you can adjust it to different sizes. So you can make the pliers themselves bigger and smaller.
Yeah.
Okay. A spanner set and lots of nuts and bolts. Tape, cable ties, cheap farm twine. In the co-ops, you can buy, it's not really a ball, I suppose it's a spindle of twine for, I forget the price, but it's probably 100 meters for 40 rand or something. It's cheap. All-purpose nylon made out of recycled Coke bottles or whatever. It's just cheap junk, but it ties tight and it doesn't snap. Rope, cord, and string. O-rings, washers, and seals. Now I'm going to contradict myself slightly and make a special mention of a welder and a generator. If in your gang of 10 or 15, one person has a welder and a generator, then you can perform repairs for which there's not always a substitute. That is to say that if something that is welded breaks, it's difficult to reproduce that with pop rivets and screws and nuts and bolts. Welding is kind of a unique thing. And if not everybody can afford a welder, but one in your team has a welder, you might find that you have a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous advantage in the times that lie ahead. Another special mention is car service spares. Whenever I have my Bucky serviced, I get the spares back, which is in some circles kind of taboo, you know. The idea of ever reusing an oil filter is just absolutely taboo in certain circles. But in the times that we're going into, it's going to be done.
Yeah.
And everybody is going to do it.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So that's tools. And the next kind of chapter in tonight's episode is basic medical. Do you want to talk about tools? Oh, I forgot a little column. Sorry, I'll quickly go through this.
Okay.
Really short.
Yeah.
A torch for night work. It suddenly occurred to me, you could have all of these tools and you need to do something at night and you don't have a torch or whatever have you. I've got paraffin lanterns that would, you know, that's what I would, and torches, obviously, but batteries won't last forever.
Yeah.
And I don't have that many rechargeable batteries. So I've kind of gone the lantern route.
Ek het solar torches en solar liggies en solar kopliggies en so alles van my nie, het ek probeer om solar by mekaar te maak. En dis van hulle wat nogal regtig waar baie helder en skerp is.
Yeah, I have two. I have one of those solar sets. You know, six different torches, not torches, lamps and so on. Yeah. Soldering, a soldering iron and solder, a pipe spanner and a vice grip. I can't really explain what those are. If people don't know what they are, they should Google them. And then I scratched out something. So I wrote them for the purpose of scratching them out, for the purpose of making it clear that I don't include these things, a spirit level. Nobody's going to care if something's out by 3 degrees. A set square, a rule, a tape measure. Nobody's going to care whether it's 16 inches long or 16 and a half. When it comes to applying your basic skills to a repair. And then last but not least, I've got, I forgot that I'm going to leave that for later, maybe the next episode. All right. So yeah. Let's go on to medical.
Kan ek nog een dingetjie daar by sit? Dit is toe ek nou in die Weskus was, of wat ook al in stedelike gebiede, en ek moes planne gemaak het hoe ek nou daar sou uitgekom het. Toe was een van my eerste tools wat ek vir myself gekoop het, was 'n bolt cutter. Want jy weet nie wat se paaie gaan jy ry om te vlug nie, en jy weet nie hoe jy deur die drade, hoe jy deur die hekke gaan gaan nie, en hoe jy deur sulke goed gaan gaan nie. So ek het, dit hoef nie 'n massiewe groot bolt cutter te wees nie, dit kan 'n medium size een wees, hulle is nie te duur nie, maar ek het, dis ook een van my heel eerste tools wat ek vir my aangekoop het, was 'n bolt cutter.
Yes, I don't disagree with you at all. I've just kind of confined myself to the tools required for a person with handy mechanical repair skills to prepare for a confined environment. You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, medical. Doesn't matter. Basic medical. Again, this is something on which I have notes, excuse me, hiccuping, going back 10 years. And, so I worked through them all again. Antibiotics, pain medication, allergy medication, chronic medication. That obviously applies to certain people. Plasters, bandages, and tampons for wound purposes. Antiseptic ointments, e.g. TCP, mercurochrome, methylate, and so on. Syringes and needles. Suture needles and thread. So, stitching needles. And then in brackets, ordinary needles and ordinary cotton thread, because it is going to be used for that purpose. Scalpels and razor blades. I don't know how many Minora razor blades I've bought over years for the purposes of serving as scalpels in the years to come. I must have, 100. Ointments, e.g. Zambuck, Friar's Balsam, Calamine Lotion. Certain Lennon's medicines are very, very powerful. Most people underestimate all Lennon's medicines, but some of them are 10 times underestimated. There are certain Lennon's medications that are very, very, very powerful. Stahl dripples, for instance.
Yeah.
Imodium, enemas. That's the opposite of Imodium. I mean, you know, you know that thing that they used to, mothers used to keep for sticking up kids' bums if they were ill. Laxatives and purges, castor oil, cod liver oil, etc., etc. Glycerine, potassium permanganate, and iodine. And where that comes from is I had a chommy who was a big prepper, and he worked at the recce base in Durban. He wasn't a recce, and he made it clear right up front. He never ever pretended to be a grensvechter of anything important. But he worked in the quartermaster's stores or something. It was a very junior position. And I think he was a private. I don't even think he was a one stripe corporal. He's just a nothing, a nobody. And He told me that the Rekkies used to have to carry potassium permanganate, iodine, and glycerin. And in fact, this was on a public forum. And he then gave a list of the things that you can do with those three things. If you've got three small bottles of those on you, you can start a fire. You can, you know, like MacGyver, blow up a building, whatever it was. I forget the things. It's stuck in my mind to this day how well and how modestly he wasn't. Windgat, if I may use that expression about his knowledge, this, that, the next thing. He said, hey, I never went to the bush. I had no idea. He said, I'm clueless. He said, I was rubbish in the army. But somehow I landed up at the Rekkie base in Durban, and I was in stores, and all I did was hand out boots for a year or 2 years, whatever it was. And he said, but this was something that I found fascinating, is that we had to keep these three-way sets for these guys. Now, I can't swear if it's true. I certainly wasn't a Rekkie, and I never went anywhere near a Rekkie base. But I think it deserves an honorable mention because a number of the purposes that he listed were medicinal purposes.
Yeah.
And then I think that's it. Marius, we've been going for half an hour. So I've timed it quite nicely. I'm quite pleased. I wrote it out with that in mind.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of myself. And then next week we can continue by there's a logical extrapolation here. Like, as I was able to guess what comes next, you know, if number one is gang and number two is location and number three is skills, well, then number four has to be basic tools and medical. And before he said it, those thoughts went through my mind. And the next thing, 30 seconds later, they were confirmed. I think that many people listening to this, this interview will be able to work out for themselves what must logically be the next thing on the list. You can just extrapolate it, but I'll give a clue. Do you have those skills? Are you a trained nurse? The answer is 9 times out of 10 going to be no. Okay, so what is the next best substitute for that for you personally? So don't kick the ball away. Don't hit the ball into somebody else's court.
Yeah.
Of course, the next best thing is that in your gang, you've got a heart surgeon and you've got the world's best DIY guy. Okay. But now you, if you are going to be useful, what is the next thing that follows tools and basic medical kits? So we'll talk about that next week.
Okay. Fantastic. Yeah. Definitief. Ek stem saam. Iets wat my familie inglo. Ek kan nou nie op die naam kom nie, man, en ek wil nou nie op Google spring, want ek hoor almal hoe tik ek hierso nie, is, wat gebruik jy om jou haar mee te bleach, Simon? Peroxide. Ja, dis een van ons goedjies wat ons inglo by ons familie op die plaas. Hy is definitief ook in ons mediese kussies, so peroxide het ook, as die mense moet gaan navorsing ook bykie oor peroxide doen, ach, daar is nou klomp ander dinge ook, colloidal silver alles, maar ja, jy het het goed saamgevat, definitief, oor die tools en die meeste mediese goederse wat mens kan voorberei, en soos ons sê, hierdie waar ons gesels gaan nie nou net oor die korte dier in die weghardloop en die wat ook al nie, dit gaan soos jy sê in jou gang of in jou groepie om useful te wees, om jouself useful te maak. Anderster as jy net 'n leecher is daar, dan gaan jy dit nie maak, hulle gaan jou uitskop, hulle gaan sê nee wat, gaan en gaan weg. So as jy van daardie goederse wat jy nou alles genoem het, darm het by mekaar, dan bring jy waarde na die groep toe. Allee, okay, daar is Simon weg, ek weet nie precies wat het gebeur nie. Wacht, hier is hy terug. Hey, Simon.
I pressed the wrong button, man. Yeah, you are absolutely Spot on. And you know, what I think many people don't appreciate is how people's values change under circumstances. In not the next episode, I think it's the following episode that I've already written, we're going to talk about dread diseases. We don't know what it's like for every second family to lose a child to appendicitis. We don't know what it's like to have a genuine fear of polio. Like, my child is going to be born. Are they going to get polio in the first years of their life? Because that is a real, real, real likelihood.
Yeah.
Not, you know, not everybody's going to get it. Maybe not even 1 out of 10, but 1 out of 100 or whatever the case may be. Leprosy. So when people are confronted by very difficult circumstances in which they're suffering tremendously, there's a lot of hardship. There's no fuel. You've got to walk. You don't have a horse. You've got to save 3 years to buy a horse and then another year to buy a saddle. And life is so much more difficult, and your children are exposed to such terrible things. And there's somebody slouching in the corner. That person is going to have to work like a dog for their daily bread. They will not be fed. They simply will not be fed.
Yeah.
And if they're not useful, they will be fed through very arduous labor. So you will either starve to death, or you will become a laborer of laborers. You know, when I was a child, we used to go to the Umbogintwini Municipal Swimming Pool, and Umbogintwini was the entire village was owned by AECI. And after a few years of going there, you know, 2 or 3 times every summer, whatever it was, my mom once said to me, the Umbogintwini Municipal Swimming Pool was adjacent to the Umbogintwini Golf Club, the country club. And there was a parking area between the two. And we used to walk out of the swimming pool and go to the car, and there was a house that stood there. For years, they eventually knocked it down. But it was a sink plot house, from top to bottom sink plot. And my mom said to me once, did you know that that was your, where your grandfather was born? I said, what? And she said, yeah, that was your great grandparents' house. Your granddad, Bert, was born in that house. He was the, I think I've got my facts straight. He was the first white baby born in Umbogintwini after AECI set up this fertilizer and explosives factory on the south coast of Natal and built this entire town with all the amenities required. They then brought in labor, poor labor from various places, and that included 11 Irish families, dog poor Irish people. And they provided, the first housing that they provided these people was sink plaat huise. And we're only, you know, 4 generations from that, or 3 generations, depending how you want to count it, or if you want to throw my sons into the mix, 5 generations, including my great grandfather. But there's a way to look at it where you say we're 3 generations from that, because I'm only 3 generations removed from, or 2 generations removed from my grandfather, and he was born in that house. So I am within touching distance of that lifestyle, that way of being, where ordinary people worked bitterly hard for very little. And if you don't want to be that person, you're either going to have to be very industrious and creative and self-reliant and what have you, you know, sort of climb to the top of the tree. But if you're an ordinary person without the X factor and without great ambition and without great intelligence and without whatever, the things that allows some people to excel more than others, then you'd better be prepared, or you're going to be the one living in the sink plot, AC.
Yeah.
And unable to feed your family, because nobody, gaan jou jammer kry, nobody is going to give you anything.
Yeah, precies. Precies, precies. Dankie Simon, weer eens vir 'n lekker gesels voorbereiding, Dink Anderster is die titel van ons nuwe reeks, en ja, hy sal teen môre middag sal hy deel wees van die potgooie. As jy nou hierdie een vanaand geluister het, en jy het nog nie die eerste episode geluister, soos ek gaan sê, het, gaan gerus na ons potgooi op die webblad, en gaan luister het, jy gaan die grondslag gaan jy dan kry, oor hoekom Simon praat oor die sekere dinge, waar hy praat op die sekere manier. Maar ja, Simon, dankie weer eens, en ek hoop jy het 'n geseënde en 'n lekker aand.
Dieselfde vir jou en jou nou ook, Marius.
Daai, dan praat ons weer donderdag aand.
Donderdag aand. Yeah, it's going to be a riller. After the stuff that's happened in the past few days. Oh, dear me. All right,
Raaks vir Simon, bye-bye.
Cheers, Marius, bye-bye.
Dit was natuurlik Simon Roche, die nationale departementshoof van buitenlands van die Suidlanders, maar hy is ook, hy het ook 'n geweldige kennis oor prepping en alles rondom voorbereiding en so aan. So weer eens, as jy nie die hele program kon geluister het, gaan luister dit môre op potgooi, as jy die eerste episode gemis het, dit is veral baie belangrik, die eerste episode, want daar word die grondslag gelê vir hoekom Simon dink oor prepping en voorbereiding soos wat hy dink, en as hy die bronne uitlig, dan gaan jy dalk nie in die donker gelos word nie.